And welcome to AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I'm Tim Capper, along with Jim Robinson. How is Florida this time of the year?
Hot. Hot and sticky.
And I'm sure anybody who is listening and listening to Florida is saying, what are you talking about, Capper? Don't you know your states? You've been there before.
It was 92 degrees here today with humidity near 80.
Yeah, you suck.
God. Woohoo!
Didn't even get to 50 here today.
I gotta tell you, I love it. My tan is awesome right now. Got the little sandal tan lines on my feet.
Ah, so you got you got the farmer tan, or do you got the t-shirt tan?
I got the beach bum tan.
Just
that tan line right behind my toes where my sandals sit.
Yeah. are you still rocking the beard?
No, I shaved it.
Did you?
I did. I got bushwhacked.
That's good. So what do you think about this past week? I mean, we've been going basic in the past couple of weeks about the mantra about there being great games. And, yeah, the games were, I guess we could say it was 50-50 this past week. But, you know, one game was, considering what the spread was, it really wasn't much of a surprise. But, overall, I think it was an okay week.
I wasn't really surprised by either outcome. Maybe the disparity in the final result of the Seoul Brigade game, I don't think that really told the true story necessarily, but you know, that's where Baltimore's problem is with their offense. You know, you take away, I know in Tampa they have a stat they created and they use for defensive efficiency, and in the creation of this metric, you take away points scored because of turnovers,
right?
That changes the outlook of that Seoul Brigade game a tad when you do that. That Brigade office just needs help. It needs help, and it's not where it needs to be. And they're going to have an up and down year based on that. Their defense, their front four is pretty legit. So, you know, I think all the other coaches in the league recognize that, and they're concerned when they play Baltimore that, you know, they don't want that front unit to get going. Mm-hmm. Because if they get going, they can get disruptive.
Right.
So, outside of that, I thought it was kind of what would happen, and fun games to watch despite the score difference. It was kind of a fun game to watch. It was a shame to see the Brigade lose two people in that game.
It was, and we'll talk about that a little bit later too. But one thing I was very impressed with is, you know, it was the first week that the Cleveland Gladiators were on Spectrum Sports, and a lot of people can say that. And to give an example, up here, the Toronto Argonauts have been on radio for forever, right? Like you would think that most teams, most football and pro football teams would be. They've gone to where they're now going to simulcast the TSN feed. So a lot of people say, it's to my point, a lot of people don't think that TV does well on the radio. I want to give props to the guys who call the games for the Cleveland Gladiators, because whether you were watching it on TV or listening to it on the radio, which it originally is, you would never know that they were doing it on radio. Because if you watched the Spectrum stream or the league stream this week, you would think that they were doing TV.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it should be. Outside of the few points where the guys calling TV might talk about something that's put up.
Yes.
You know, as far as a stat or... Mm-hmm. You know, something of that nature.
Or some graphic, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they use the word graphic and say, look to, or let's point to this that you can see. Everything should be apples and apples.
It should be, but I've seen it before. It just doesn't. It just for some, it just doesn't come off very well. And I just think that top notch. I mean, we've had ones that who've been able to do it before in the past, and you know, some of them aren't that good when it comes to the crossover. But I think they did. I think they did an amazing job, and I just want to give them props. We might as well stick with the Cleveland game. You know, first time that Cleveland had never been 0-4 in their Cleveland Gladiators history to start a season, and them coming into the game with new head coach Ron Stileski, it makes you wonder. Besides all the injuries that this team had, could this have been a make or break game for him? Or
sorry,
but to be fair, I know Arena League. You rarely have a head coach fired mid season. That I get, and I
understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I was just thinking back to a phrase we used to joke around about in the front office, that people use, that this is a must-win game.
Right. Oh, you hear that all the time, yeah.
And it's just so poorly used, properly used. And I specifically remember talking to Jason Dixon about this. And and shout out to him. He's going to be calling the Storm game speaking in Baltimore.
Yeah.
So a little nostalgia there for old-time arena fans. I forget how it came up. Someone mentioned it, and we both kind of shrugged. Like, you want to win every game, but not every game is a must-win game. If it's a must-win game this early in the season and you lose it, what does that mean?
Right.
So phrasing it the way you said it, it brought back those memories. That's
I mean, the team has – you got it, Matt. I mean, the team has had to overcome adversity.
They've had injuries. They hit the injury bug week one, and then it took them a little bit to get on their feet. And, you know, they played better in week two, and they played better in week three, and week four they get their W. So, but to say needed to win, must win, had to win, you want to win, and, you know, it feels good to get a win. But I just personally, for me, I don't like the phrasing of it that way.
I think it's funny when we're talking about this off air is that, you know, from one week to the next, as you and I both know, a player and quarterback can get hot. You know, this Cleveland team was able to get their first victory of the year by completely flipping the script of what they did last week with Quentin Sims. It is, you know, they were able to, you know, Quentin Sims was a beast last week completely, and they're completely able to flip things around. More touchdowns rushing this week than passing.
Yeah, you know, the ability to change and adapt, when you can do that successfully, that leads to positive results. And they found those results this week.
Right. And obviously, on the other side of the ball, when it comes to Washington, them losing their namesake, something's not right with Mike Washington.
Yeah, we don't know what that is. They didn't put it out. Feelers I sent out, I didn't get replies. He was banged up. You saw him on the sideline if you were watching, and he just didn't go. Wasn't ready, you know, to go. Or apparently they felt they didn't need him at that point, or chance whatever that issue is with going.
Yeah. Now, obviously, we'll bring a lot of this stuff up again in the good, the bad, and the ugly segment. And thankfully we got a question this week, which we are very happy to have. But I have to mention it at least, because I know, you know, one of the historical statisticians, you know, Adam Marcus, was pointing this stuff out too. What is with Washington and their anemic, can we use another word, anemic second half offense?
I'll let you take the first crack at this. I've cut on record the past couple weeks on how I feel about that team. I think there's a lot of talent on that team, and I just don't like the makeup of it. And I think there's some issues there, and those issues lead to the results you're seeing. Things get bogged down at the end of the second quarter as halftime approaches. There are mistakes made, and they don't seem to be able to change course, reverse course, make those corrections needed to get back into the flow they had early in the game.
Washington has scored a grand total of 92 points in the first half and a grand total of 24 in the second, with a whopping 3 points in the third quarter. Something's wrong. You know, it's like they get up for the first half and they completely forget. You know, it's halftime again. It's halftime, then they come up for the second half and they completely forget that they're supposed to play another half of football.
We could do a whole segment, a whole show just on this.
Oh, I know.
If you really wanted to. I think there's definitely some reasons that can be articulated, but the bottom line is they need to figure out in-house how to get this fixed. I think this is something we've seen over the past few seasons with some teams, and those teams also struggled to get those things fixed. And in particular, I'm talking about some recent Tampa Bay Storm teams and some recent New Orleans Voodoo teams.
They've been outscored in the second half, 80-24. So, I mean, it's – again, but again, 3 points. 3 points. I think they had been shut out until they scored their fourth quarter touchdown this week, but it was almost – I think it was almost 50 minutes in the second half without a point. I think that's what it was. So, but that's just – that's crazy. You know, it's like they're playing NFL football in the – you know, they're forgetting that it's arena ball. So something has to be done in order for this team to be competitive. I mean, yes, they're being competitive in the first half, but ugh, I don't know.
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out as the season progresses if Dean's able to turn that around and get it fixed.
Yeah, they need to do something. They need to do something because, you know, they're able to hold on for their win versus Baltimore, but since then, yeesh. But either way, congratulations to Coach Leska for getting his first win since, I think it's 2004. Arena League win since 2004, I think is what it was.
you actually went and looked that up.
Well, that's when he was the last. That's the last time he was a head coach.
It's been a while.
So I had to.
Congratulations.
I had to be fair because that's 2004, Carolina Cobras, 2004. Second game we're talking about a little bit is the Baltimore Philadelphia game. Philadelphia comes out and, you know, they unveil their Arena Bowl championship banner, raise it to the rafters. For some particular reason, the team wore their same uniforms that they wore on the road. Only Tim would notice that type of thing.
No, you're not the only one that noticed that.
Oh, really? Good. I'm glad to see I'm not the only one then. I mean, considering that the Grays are technically their home...
They have something special in the works, so we'll just wait for them to announce that.
Ah, okay. I was wondering. You and I will have to get together off air. but is just by seeing, I mean, Baltimore has looked good and bad. I mean, everybody's talking about. There's a thread going on over the Arena Fan message boards talking specifically about Shane Carden. Is it an issue with him itself, or is it that this team? Because he's shown some brilliance, but just
there's a couple things.
A lot of things seem to be lacking, but also losing a big time. Great segue there, Capper. You know,
big play.
Yeah, big play. A receiver. Is it the team itself, or is it just Carden, or is it just a combination of more than just that?
I think it's the one big thing is lack of experience at the quarterback position. Okay. Period.
Okay.
You're not going to get over that. It is hard for young quarterbacks to enter this league and find immediate success. Mm-hmm. The throws are different. The speed is different. The angles are different. It's tough. And even guys that have a lot of experience still struggle with that.
Tanner Marsh is a good example. Tanner Marsh is a good example of a rookie who's had some issues.
Yeah, the angles of your throws are different. Everything's different. Even the timing of the routes are a little different. Particularly the speed of the rush and when it gets to you. Everything's just a little different, and it takes a while to get used to it. And what you don't have now is if you're going to get a young quarterback that has indoor experience, you're getting guys from other leagues where the competition level isn't quite as stiff. But more importantly, the rules are a little different.
Okay.
So you're not going to get where you could – in the past, you could have guys come up through the AF2 ranks and get that experience. Mm-hmm. Now you're having problems grooming a guy. So you have to legitimately use a roster spot for a guy you want to groom. You got to say, we like this guy. We like what he looks like. It could be a Tanner Marsh, like you were saying, and we just need to groom him and let him grow. And
what about a Pete Thomas, just to throw a quarterback who actually did quite well? I mean,
I would still argue it was marginal.
Yeah.
And you weren't going to find great success with him last season regardless, because he needed to grow and learn. So there's that. Then you look at their wide receiver core, losing Reggie Gray hurts, but they didn't have a lot of depth behind him.
That's true, too. Yeah.
You know, you could do a little better on the offensive line there. And these are all guys who hadn't played together before. So, you don't have that continuity that a team like the Philadelphia Soul has.
Right.
And that creates further issues and difficulties on bringing the guys together and understanding nuances and things of that nature with play calls and what you see and looks and reading and everybody being on the same page and reading what they see at the same time and how they're going to react. So it's a lot of little things, but the biggest thing is the quarterback. Now, to be fair to Shane, he doesn't have a lot of experience. He has shown flashes that he can do good things.
Right.
But who else are they going to turn to? Legitimately, he should be taking reps in practice and maybe getting some scrub time at the end of games to get some more experience or spots play. Ideally, with what you want to do with him to grow him and groom him. But that's not the situation.
Okay. No, it's true.
So, you do that or you go with Cartwright, who really, although he's played before, he doesn't have a lot of playing experience either.
No, but it's funny. Cartwright has looked a heck of a lot better, though. And I think they're going with the guy that Coach Smith thinks can, lead them the farthest.
Yeah. Are those offensive struggles? I'm going to say it's because of the quarterback play. I'm not going to say his name. What I'm going to say is that Shane Carden has some potential there to grow. We'll see if that pans out as the season progresses.
Right.
If you don't see a continual uptick, it'll be a long season for the Brigade because they'll have difficulty matching points. And if they turn the ball over like they did against the Philadelphia Soul last week, I don't care how good that defense is. It's still not going to help.
Yeah. Now, we're talking about flipping the script. Philadelphia Soul did the exact same thing this week. Last week it was all Darius Money Reynolds. This week, mm-hmm. Ryan McDaniel. What a week, eh?
Oh, he had a fabulous game. And it all started off with that one-handed catch, man. Once he caught that, yeah. He was in fuego. So, kudos to him. That was a tremendous game. And, you saw at halftime the interview Dozell gave to the sideline reporter. And, you could see there was some disappointment in how they ended. But you start looking at the final result, you got to be happy with that if you're Philadelphia, particularly big, big weekend in Philadelphia. You had the draft. You get to put your banner up. You invite all these dignitaries and honorees in to watch the game, and you put up this exciting game.
Yeah, Flacco being as your
honorary team captain.
Honorary team captain. It's funny. Him being a Baltimore guy and wearing a Philadelphia jersey.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were talking about that one. It's like, what?
Well, he's also a Delaware guy, and Delaware quite often is associated with Philadelphia, the Delco area.
Okay. Okay. When you said Delaware, I was thinking Delmarva in particular, but I'm thinking that doesn't include Pennsylvania, does it?
I don't even know what you're talking about. So
you know they call the area the D.C. area the DMV?
Yes.
Okay, Delmarva is the same thing. It's Delaware. Delmarva is
Delaware, Maryland, Virginia.
Thank you.
But that upper part of Delaware and Pennsylvania and New Jersey there, people often refer to that as Delco area.
Ah, I did not know that one. Okay. I learn something new every day.
So, it's something different. But for the Philadelphia, I think the biggest disappointment for them was the points they allowed in the second quarter and some of their offensive struggles. Their offensive line play has not been where it has in past seasons.
Yeah.
And that's what they have a lot of continuity on that roster, but where they're missing people is that's one of the positions. Another position where they're missing somebody is obviously Jake Metz. And Kent Richardson on the defense end, those are two high-profile players you got to replace. I think they're doing they did a pretty good job with the guys they started the season off, and we'll get to that a little bit more a little bit later.
Yes, we will.
But on the offensive line, you know, they had some struggles, and once again, we'll get to that because they're looking to shore that up.
A couple of other milestones, by the way, a pretty big milestone that happened in the Baltimore-Philadelphia game was that Michael Benson, he moved into fifth place in AFL history in rushing touchdowns.
Chugga-chugga.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know he was an outstanding baseball player.
That I did not know.
Yes, he was.
That I did not. Was he drafted by MLB or –
He played at FAMU baseball and football.
Okay, but he when he was drafted, it was only for football. Or when he tried to, he chose a sport.
I think he chose a sport. I don't recall. Okay.
Well, he's now fifth all time. He has 93 total touchdowns, rushing touchdowns in his career. He did pass the very well known Dan Alexander. He is eight behind Odie Armstrong. And obviously, Derek Ross has the league record with 195. So Benson, you have a while to go.
A way to go. Yes, he does. But congratulations.
Yeah. So question is where to go. You know what? Well, let's go with our question. I was very happy to get the question this week from one of the fans. Let me bring it up here. The question was from Sean Johnson. And shout out to Sean. Obviously, he's in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So it does show that even if you
go Heels,
even though you don't have a team in your area, you can still like arena football. Had a team at one point. He goes, here's his question. But he said, especially for you, by the way, he likes you better. Specifically because he says that you've seen Joe Heels play in person this year. But he goes, is it just me or is Joe Hill's quote-unquote off? I know he's been able to continue his unprecedented and unlikely to be ever repeated touchdown streak, but something really seems to be up with him. He's rarely open, and when he's open, he drops the ball. He hasn't been much of a factor for the Tampa Bay offense. It seems that they've had to force the ball to him in the red zone and at the end of games just to keep his streak alive. Even his late TD he scored in the Cleveland game was an easy catch that he bobbled three times and almost dropped. What do you think?
I was writing some notes down. You mention the part where he also brought up the onside kick?
No, I didn't. He goes, it didn't get mentioned last week, but your inaugural ugly moment, the botched onside kick fielding from in the Storm game, was courtesy of Joe Hills. It bounced right off of his hands into the Cleveland player. He's not been as a dominant player for the Storm, though, in the first three games. And he says he thinks back to Doug Martin's subpar season with the Bucks. Great segue. Great local segue there. And hope nothing is up with Joe like that. What do you think? Is he not fit? Is he not a fit in this Tampa Bay offense? Is the staff not using him well, or is it, as it appears to me, on Joe?
Well, that's I had put together and talked with some people and got some notes together on this, and I was going to address that first, the onside kick. I think that there is a teachable coaching moment for the players. From my view of it, I'm going to say he was surprised, but I think Lamarck Brown should have actually got the ball, and he didn't, and it ended up hitting Joe in the face, which is quite embarrassing. But I would.
Well, you get a ball in the face mask, that's going to be tough anyways.
Yeah. So first, I think that's more a coaching moment in that situation and having the guys prepared. That to me was like when the ball gets hit in baseball into the outfield, and you have to designate who's in charge, and it's usually your center fielder who makes the calls.
Right.
In this instance, this was a he said, she said, who's getting it, and it looks bad. But that's exactly why I mentioned it as my ugly moment last week.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so, but I think that, that's separate from what he's asking on the offensive side as a receiver. And I have to say, as a viewer myself, I see what he sees, and Sean makes, you know, an apt description of what he's seeing. But the fact is, right now, he is second in the league in receptions, fifth or sixth in yards, and tied for first in touchdowns. So maybe the question is, are we putting too much on him because everyone, including myself, has said he's the best receiver in the league? And is that standard higher? But really, I don't even want to go there with it. I would say if you look back to his year last year with the Sharks, in his first three games, he had 25 catches for 209 yards and 9 touchdowns. This year, he has 2 more catches. He has almost 46, 47 more yards, and he's 1 touchdown down. So the numbers are very similar.
Yeah.
So I would suggest looking at his career, each of his seasons has started off like this, and then taking a second look at it, if you look at the tape, you go back, if you can, well, it's going to be hard to find because those are all CBS games, but if you happen to have recorded and know someone who did, early in the games, he's getting a lot of double coverage or high-low coverage, or he's getting someone underneath him and someone sitting over the top, and Randy Hippard's seeing it, and he's going the other way. And that's been a benefit to Lamar Brown, who's had a really great start of a season.
Yes, he has.
He's putting up huge numbers, and that's because he has someone that's taking the defense away from him. And so Randy's making good decisions, and if you look, he's leading the league in completion percentage, and he's going where the defense dictates.
Well, that's what I was thinking, too, is that when it comes to Joe Hills, you know he's such a big target. He has such a great he's such a tall player. He's able to go up and get the ball and whatnot. And we know what he's done during the streak and over his career.
Now, what that doesn't explain is some of the bobbles he's had, but he's always had those. And other players have, too. If you look at D-Money up in Philadelphia, Reynolds, every now and then, he has stretches where he has those bobbles as well.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, so those are some things that if you want to look at this and add context to it, you have that. And then as well as fit for the offense, realistically, he didn't get the ball in the first half last week because of the way the defense was playing. And Randy Hippard went to Lamarck Brown and Kendrick Gaines because they were the open guys. However, in the second half, he caught 10 balls.
That's right.
And that's because the defense saw what Lamarck was doing and they had to respect that and they shifted. And Randy Hippard saw that. The coaching staff saw that and they started going back to Joe Hills. So I think it's not necessarily that he's not a good fit for the offense. It's that the offense, the way Coach James's offense is set and the way it's built, is you're going to have typically 2 receivers with very similar numbers, your 1 and your 2, and that's going to be kind of dictated by what the defense does. And then you're going to see a third guy where not quite those same numbers. So you might have a 10 and a 10 catch receiver, and then a 5 and 7 catch receiver.
Okay.
Or a 9 and 8 and a 5 and a 6.
Right.
And so it's all about distributing the ball, and it's about going where the hole is. I mean, it is that simple a concept. You know, whether it's the NFL or the AFL, and if you're able to do your pre-snap read and your post-snap read correctly, you know where the hole is, and if the proper play is called, you know, option A is gone, option B is gone, I got to go option C.
Right.
And so in that aspect, you're going to see Joe have some monster games and some smaller games due to that. So is it that he's having a down year? I think he's having a slow start like he does every year.
Yeah.
And it's nothing more than that. If we get into week 8 and 9 and that stays consistent and
The streak and the drops, and God forbid the streak ends, and
well, there might be something to that too. The streak,
yeah.
You know, I haven't asked anybody about it, but this isn't a streak where like I'm reaching a touchdown mark or a reception mark. Where okay, if I just get that number, it's done. I get two catches today and I hit 100 catches or whatever it is.
Right, right.
This is – you got to continue game in and game out. And I got to think, you know, me personally, as much as if you were to ask me, I would tell you, records are nice. I just want to win a game.
Right.
In the back of my head, I'm keeping chart. I know what the number is. I know where it's at. And that can – that you know, that there's a possibility that may be wearing on him. You know, I don't want to speak for him. I'm yeah. saying that's how it might affect me, but there is that potentiality.
I always say when I've talked to Joe a couple of times, and the last time I spoke with him was when he was playing for Jacksonville in the Arena Bowl. And you know what? I said, Joe, you know, I'm not going to ask. I'm not really going to ask you about it. Because he's known more as a receiver than just the streak. Sure, it's a part of his career. You know what I mean? So it's
yeah.
I'm there to, you know, I may mention it and he may give me, a very proper press answer of it's not, nothing that I think about. Okay, that's fine. You know, and you just go with it from there. But I'm really on the same page as you. I think, you know, he started off slow.
And remember, we're saying he started off slow.
Yeah, it's a new head coach.
Mm-hmm. A different offense.
Yep.
A new quarter. Well, they have some history, yeah. But that was years ago. But yet, he's second in receptions, fifth or sixth in yards, and tied for first in touchdowns. Yeah. So, it might be a matter of perspective. But the optics from which Sean is talking about, from what he saw, I can understand that a little bit.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, it's. We thank you for the question, obviously. We hope that more fans will email us in the future. You can send us an email over at tim.capper@arenafan.com. And, hey, if you become a topic of the conversation for the podcast, you know, we welcome it. We welcome it very much. Do not forget also that we are on social media. You can head over to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It's all /@arenafan. And also, if you happen to miss any of the previous episodes of AFL Tonight, you can head over to our SoundCloud account, or you can also check out the full history over at Google Play Music, or head over to the iTunes store and hit us up and rate us, like us. We would like that quite a bit. We want to know exactly what you think of the show.
Or if you dislike us, you can keep your opinion to yourself.
Nice.
Just send us an email or send Tim an email.
Yes, yeah.
Better yet.
Yes, send me the email. Since people seem to like it, we brought it back this week and we were able to – it wasn't much more of a surprise to Jim this week than it was to him last week. We got to talk about it a little bit more. The good, bad, and the ugly.
Yes, sir.
There are quite a bit, and actually it's funny. Out of a lot of the stuff, I've actually modified mine a little bit since we talked about it. Anyways – let's go with the good. Go ahead and start.
Well, if you modified, I might modify too. I'm gonna go with two for the good, and they're my co-good this week.
Okay.
First off, Dwayne Hollis.
Yes.
Terrific game, two picks, pass breakup, made impact plays for that Philadelphia defense, and he's picking up where he left off last season. Great game, and well deserving of. The award he got this week. The second, his co-good champ of the week would be the kicker for the Tampa Bay Storm, filling in on that was 2 weeks ago.
Oh, no.
Oh, so Dwayne gets it by himself this week.
You're DQ'd.
Yeah. For some reason, I started thinking about Double Alvarado, and I was like, wow, they had a perfect kicking game. They haven't had
it was? No.
In a long time.
What it was is that, unfortunately, you had no more goods in the bank. So when you try to use it, you're getting an unsportsmanlike penalty. I'm sorry.
Uh-oh. That might lead to something else.
My good – I actually added something to it. Actually, my good was a Cleveland win. It was very nice to see the team get off get off the bad –
Get off the
bad luck run that they've had for the first three games. But also on top of that, I want to give a shout out, because we didn't at the top of the show, was to give a shout out to Brandon Tompkins and his 500th career catch. So those that's my good.
Well played.
For you switch yours up here. For the bad, what was yours?
Oh, I went back and forth on the bad and the ugly here on this one. But for the bad, I decided I was going to go with the referees in the Cleveland Gladiator Washington Valor game. Just some of the calls in that game and how they were enforced.
Oh, you're going back to bad. You're going back to bad on this one because this originally.
I decided that that's going to be the bad one.
Okay.
It definitely could be seen as ugly, but I just think it was bad. I think the fumble by Meyer on the goal line, that the ball was still on the goal line. That was either a safety or a Cleveland touchdown. And if they said Meyer recovered that ball, that should have been a safety because that ball was clearly on the goal line. They gave a benefit of the doubt there that was not there. I don't care if you had a sideline angle of the goal line or not. It was clear as day that that ball was on the goal line, and Meyer was in the end zone and had to pull it towards him to gain possession. So that was bad.
Okay.
What else was bad was the penalty that was called later in the game on Coquinos, and I'll explain that in the next segment.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, I was about to say, you're going to give it up. My bad would be the injury to Reggie Gray. You know, he's been one of the players and one of the faces of the Baltimore franchise even before they had a name. Basically, I think it's basically the same thing they announced him, because if you remember, you know, Coach Smith was asked about that in one of the arenafootball.com interviews that I did for the league. It's just going to put more pressure on Coach Smith and on Shane Carden. They have to find out who's going to be their guy to go to. And I don't think they've signed anybody yet this week as far as wide receivers go. I guess they're going to go with what they currently have. But I think, to me, that's my bad.
My bad.
I feel for the Baltimore franchise, and especially for Reggie Gray, a very well-known AFL veteran player. Ugly. What's your ugly?
The use of timeouts and that little red hanky in your back pocket by Coach Coquinos.
Okay.
Blowing the timeouts, using the timeout to throw the challenge flag on a play he shouldn't have thrown the challenge flag on, and ending up losing your final timeout. And then later, around the 2:30 mark of the fourth quarter,
something like that,
throwing a challenge flag when you have no timeouts. And it got even uglier when the referees applied the ruling wrong.
Yes.
So just
you and I went over that at length before the show tonight.
That's why I had to move it to the ugly. Just the whole view scenario. I understand during the course of the game, it's easy for you and me or anybody to sit on the sideline and criticize and critique how timeouts are used.
Yeah.
But the usage was poor in a game in which it's tight and you're going to need your timeouts, to use them up so early and not have them later in the game when you might need them, and then to lose track that you don't have any more timeouts and to throw the challenge flag.
Yeah, burning
that situation.
Yeah, burning his two timeouts basically early on a play which a lot of people felt that it really should not have been challenged. You know, you call a timeout before that, and then you throw your challenge flag, and then you lose it.
I kind of get a little bit that challenge from a coach's perspective, because you're trying to listen to what your players say. You have a limited view of the board, which probably factors against what I'm saying right now. Because if you don't feel that confident, you probably shouldn't throw it.
But
their argument was that that Carr made a football move, and then the ball was ripped out after he made a football move. Thus, it should have been a touchdown.
Yeah, but I'm going to say to you, have you been to Cleveland? You know how big their screen is? There is no bad angle for that screen.
Yeah, but when we're watching, all we see is what the truck feed is giving to the TV they put a camera on.
I know, but that's exactly
we don't get to see. We don't see what's going on the Jumbotron.
That's the exact same feed.
No.
In Cleveland?
No, it's not.
In Cleveland?
It is. No, it's not. It's not. Okay. No. The trucks use TV cameras.
I was under the impression that was the exact same feed that they gave in Cleveland.
And what goes on the Jumbotron are the in-house cameras.
I stand corrected.
Now, there's a possibility you may be correct because last Tampa Bay Storm home game, CBS utilized the in-house cameras. They tapped into the feed and used that in the truck, and that's how Tampa Bay lost a challenge.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
Or came out on the losing end of it. I forget which one. It was the blocked extra point that was returned for a defensive touchdown.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And that was taken off of the board, and the camera angle they used was an in-house feed. Okay. Now, so they may have been able to do that in Cleveland. I don't know. We'd have to talk to a Cleveland person, and they could let us know.
Yeah.
But that being said, you know, I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt to Washington on this. But realistically, if you don't know, you know, most players, they always feel they made the catch or they made the play or, you know, even if it's questionable, you're taught as you grow up through sports, sell it. Make it hard for the ref to rule against you. So from that perspective, you know, maybe you shouldn't be listening to players. Nonetheless, timeout called to throw the challenge flag and lose the third timeout and then throw the challenge flag with no timeouts. And then the refs botched the call there. So that's why it got ugly.
Okay. And just give a little bit of clarification for what he's talking about. It's about 2 minutes and 18 seconds left in the fourth quarter. And Coach Koch, he tried to challenge a play, which I don't understand.
There was a throw to the sideline to T.T. Oliver, and it was ruled incomplete.
Right, and he went to go ahead and he threw his challenge flag, and obviously at that point he didn't have any timeouts left, so you can't have any challenges. And as the rules state in the appendix for replay, if you do that, you're going to get a penalty called against you, which should be for unsportsmanlike conduct, which is a 10-yard penalty. For some particular reason, the referee crews on site called it a delay of game, which is only, as you and I both know, is only 5 yards. So, yeah, I can understand why it's ugly. You miss the play. The refs don't get the call right. I did try to get some clarification on the rule itself and what was done, and I didn't hear anything back before airtime tonight. So if I can follow up in the near future with you guys, I will do just that. Lastly, for the week, ugly second half offense. Second half offense of the Washington Valor. What I said earlier, you score 3 points in the second. You score 3 points in the third quarter alone. After four games, you go through a run of almost. I think it's I said almost 51 minutes of being scoreless in the second half. Yeah, you have some problems, and it's something that has to be dealt with immediately. Or your one single win will just be just that for the entire year. It's going to be your one single win. And this team has... They
it's
got,
like a bed sore. You got to take care of it or it's just there and festers.
Get the ointment. I need the ointment. They have the tools. They have the tools. They have the talent. Oh, yeah, Ghostbusters. It's Miller time. yeah. So... if you yourself have any ideas for the good, bad, and the ugly, send them our way also. We're also very happy to hear about them. Before we get two other quick things to talk about before we get to the games, the players of the week this week, I know you mentioned it earlier a little while ago in one, the good, and the bad, the ugly segment. First is the offensive player of the week. We talk about him before.
I think this was a no-brainer.
Yeah, no-brainer. Out of the first 4 weeks, this was a no-brainer. Yeah. Offensive player of the week is Ryan McDaniel. We talked about it before. 5 touchdowns, 8 receptions, 123 yards. He tied a career high with the 5 receiving touchdowns. The last time he did it was in week 3 in 2015 versus Jacksonville. And then the defensive player of the week was, as you mentioned before, Dwayne Hollis. Monster week. And I think for the first week, it's something that both you and I completely agree with, right?
Yeah, I was talking with people during the game, And it was literally like, okay, the awards this week should be a no-brainer. It's these two guys. Mm-hmm. And then a little bit later, I saw Adam Markowitz tweet the same thing, and we just were all laughing. Like, this is pretty easy this week. Those guys deserve it. They were the showcase performances of the week.
Yeah. And you hinted towards it a little bit earlier in the show, but the Soul yesterday came out with a release that they have picked up. Have been assigned to very, very well-known Arena League veterans and have added strength to their offensive and defensive lines.
Yeah, they brought in Tyree Glasper. I expect him not to play Mac linebacker. Bo Bell is playing well. And I remember the first show of the week, I questioned, you know, where he finished off last season and with his age, where he'd be. And I talked with some people in Philadelphia, and they said, we love where Bo is at this year. We love his energy. We love his performance and his attitude. And he's been nothing but spectacular to start the season off. So that leads me to believe you're going to see Tyree as an end filling in and rotating in. To replace, you know, make up for the loss of Jake Metz. Mm-hmm. And then Brennan Carvalho has come back to the Philadelphia Soul.
Yeah.
And he will help anchor that offensive line. And that is a huge, huge improvement for what was already a pretty good offensive line.
Yes.
So, you know, when you get a chance to add two all-arena performers, it's not a shabby day.
No, it is not. I mean, as I said, this team just seems to be getting better and better. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how these two guys are able to contribute to the success of this team. So the first test will be this week, but we'll have to keep an eye on it, right? I mean, it should be fun. Let's see. Games of the week. Do not forget, by the way, that there is not a Friday game this week. That game has been pushed to Saturday at the same time at 7 o'clock. It was due to a Cavaliers thing that was scheduled for Friday. So do not forget that game is going to be on. I think that's going to be the Arena Football League's AFL Live Game of the Week. It's also going to be on Spectrum. As I mentioned before, it's going to be the guys who are doing because the game's going to be in Cleveland, it's going to be the guys who are doing the broadcast there. So if you haven't watched it yet, do so. Make sure you head over to arenafootball.com/live to watch the game on Saturday, May 6th at 7 o'clock. You know, in a way, it's two different teams sort of going two different directions. You know, Cleveland was finally able to get their first win of the year. But now they got the world champs coming into town.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah, dun dun dun. What do you think? I mean, the history between these two teams. I mean, the Soul lead the overall record at 12-8. Philadelphia won of 2 of 3 last year. I mean, Arvell Nelson, is he enough? I mean, does Cleveland have to play a perfect game in order to beat the Soul?
Perfect? No, but they better play really well. Mm-hmm. The offense needs to be clicking. Arvell needs to have no mistakes. They need to do a solid job of protecting, which I think they'll be able to do. I think that the key for Cleveland in this game is the health of the back end of the defense, and can the front end of the defense apply enough pressure to slow down their offense. And I think we've seen, even in last week with Baltimore, when Baltimore was able to get pressure on Dan Radebaugh, they were able to slow the Soul offense down.
Right.
If Cleveland can do that, yes, there's a chance. They could win.
According to Five Dimes, by the way, the Philadelphia Soul are a 10-point favorite with an over-under of 111.5 points.
Woo! That's the highest one so far of the season, isn't it?
I think week one may have had something close to that. I'd have to double check. I'm trying to head over to Massey real quick to see what it started off at. Wow. Unless there's been a lot of betting done, Massey has had Philadelphia originally at -7.5. So it's already at 10.
I might have jumped on that 7.5 myself.
Should have jumped on the 10.
Why would you do that if you could get it at 7.5?
Well, Philadelphia is now favored by 10.
Oh, I meant grabbing Philly, not Cleveland.
Yeah, oh, yeah, okay. I think it's going to be a tough game. I really think, you know, Philadelphia seems to be going on all, you know, clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah.
So I think this can be a high-scoring game. You know, you do have a dual threat with Arvell Nelson, and you saw that last week.
I think the big thing, too, is it helps. Philly's the home team.
No.
No, I'm sorry. I'm looking.
Cleveland.
Yes, my apologies.
You got another flag on you.
Yes.
Delay of game.
Another flag on me. I just realized I was looking at the Gladiator schedule.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And they play Philly back to back.
Yeah, good save.
Not a save. Yeah, that, still a save.
Yeah, the game on Sunday, early game, it's going to be the CBS Sports Network game of the week. It is the inaugural home game for the Baltimore Brigade. Tampa Bay travels to Baltimore. Tampa Bay coming off of a bye week. I think it should be a very interesting game. But as I said, as we've said for a couple of weeks, this is a Tampa Bay team, complete team, you know, different team than they were last year. So it's
very much so, very much so.
Yeah, so I'm very surprised. You know, Tampa Bay's actually only favored by 7.5 points by five times.
Over under is 100.5. I think that's realistic. Dean does a good job of getting his defenses prepared. He really has his whole career. His defenses have always been tough, and you know, not that they were always the top scoring defense in the league, but they've always been able to grind teams down. Mm-hmm. And Dean's familiar with a lot of the players on the Storm offense, so I think that's pretty solid spread right there.
You said Dean?
Yeah.
As in?
Dean Kokinos.
Yeah.
Coach of the Washington Valor.
Yes, that's right, considering they're playing Baltimore. You know what? Just like in arena football.
I am just so screwed up today. What am I looking at?
There's your third one. So like in arena football, you have it's your second 1.5. You're gone. You're DQ'd for sure this time.
I'm ejected for the rest of the half.
You're ejected. So I'd like to thank everybody for joining us for AFL Tonight this week. Just for Tim Capper. I don't know what about Jim Robinson's thinking.
The Brigade. All right.
You know what? Like you're talking about at the beginning of the show. I think
can we hit the button and go and start all over? Yeah,
the Tampa Bay heat's getting to your head.
I'm all fluffed. What can I say? You know what? I mean,
you had one thing right. They are expansion team.
Oh man. So no.
So what do you want to retract?
All of it. Can we just hit delete and start all over?
No. Posterity. This is going to be on the internet forever.
Yes, it is. So Tampa Bay at Baltimore. First game at the arena there.
It's a smaller arena, but it's, you know.
Yeah, Royal Farms.
The Royal Farms.
I think that the biggest challenge for both teams is that the Baltimore Orioles have a home game at 1:30 at the same that day, and so I want to see a big turnout and a loud crowd for this home opener. Just like I said with Washington, that's just the fan in me. You want to see that, and you want to root for that. I certainly hope that is the case.
I do too. I do, and the arena doesn't hold as much as it does, say, like at Verizon Center or in Tampa Bay. It's a small.
So it could still get very loud in there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because of that, I could see both teams not being as amped and up as they might be if the crowd isn't loud.
Well, that could be to Tampa Bay's advantage.
Yeah, it could. I don't know. I think even as a visiting team, you know, outside of if you turn the ball over, they score a touchdown and then you turn the ball over and they score a touchdown, and that tide turns and the crowd gets loud, and you know that can get on a visiting team a little bit. But if it's just loud and raucous and there's banter going back and forth, and it's not because of what I just said, it's because of a great play on the field, then yes, it can build a team up. But if it's quiet in there, sometimes that can be difficult as a visiting team to come in, and you can come in a little flat.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what happens. Hopefully, you know, knock on some wood, that it is a raucous crowd in there, and they're pumped and they're hyped and they're jacked and loud. Baltimore doesn't have the offense to match Tampa Bay's offense.
I think the line's a little misleading. I think it's a little low. I think Tampa Bay, I think, at least by 10. I think if everything goes well, you know, I don't know. I just think that the Tampa Bay Storm have more of a veteran presence, especially on offense. I don't see why Tampa Bay lose. I don't see how Tampa Bay loses this game.
They also have the recent addition of Paul Stephens.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think people are going to see he's going to make an immediate impact on that defense, and for the highlights that people have seen with the Storm defense this year, if you just look from a statistical standpoint, it's really not super impressive, but they've came up with the stops when they needed them, outside of that Philly game. But you know, a lot of people will argue, you know, there was a missed call or two in that game. But that aside, I think Paul Stephens is going to make an impact on the back end of that defense. And once again, Baltimore's problems aren't on the defensive side of the ball. In particular, I think Tampa Bay is taking extra precaution and extra work to nullify that pass rush that Baltimore has.
And also a throwback for those of you who are watching the Transaction Wire. Josh Bush was signed by the Tampa Bay Storm. There is a throwback.
Yes, there was that as well this week.
Yeah,
we'll see. I have my doubts he'll be active for this game. He last played in 2013.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, with Orlando. So
yeah, are his legs there? I see him as adding depth, but I don't know how else that plays out. We could talk. You know, we could go on about that for a while, but the offensive struggles in Baltimore are going to be the issue in this game. And so now that I realize that this is Baltimore and Tampa Bay and not Washington Tampa Bay, yes, I think that spread might be a little high, in particular because high. I don't know if Baltimore will put enough points on the board.
You mean the over-under is high? Or I think the line is low.
Over under and line both.
So you think they're low? You think
when I thought it was Washington, I thought it was right on the money.
At a minus seven, minus 7.5. I think minus 7.5 is too low. I think it should be like a 10 for
10.
Tampa Bay.
Now you're confused. I was confused earlier. What I'm saying was what I said earlier was. I thought it was good.
Oh, okay.
Because I thought it was Washington.
Oh, okay. Okay. So
you correctly corrected me.
Okay.
And now that I understand it's Baltimore, yes, okay. I just don't see Baltimore's offense being able to put enough points on the board.
Okay. Now I get it.
The only way they win is if they win the turnover battle by like a +3 margin.
And as we've seen so far this year, I think just this past week was really the first time that we've had. Can we say a plethora of turnovers?
Yeah, I think you're right on the mark with that.
Yeah, so one heck of a show this week. By the way, just a quick shout out to something that came across the wire before we finished the show. The league has released their newest edition of AFL Unfiltered. It is available on the front page of arenafootball.com. It's they are talking with, it's funny, Joe Hills. And they also seem to have a regular segment called the Commissioner's Corner. So I haven't checked it out yet, but make sure you head over to the league site and check that out too. So we will see you next week. Enjoy the games. So everybody here at AFL Tonight, for Jim Robinson, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.
Deuces.